I'm Device from Astralis, and welcome to Foreign's YouTube channel. It's a choke-free zone.
Right, let's dive back in again, because if we go back to the first year you were in Fnatic, another angle that people won't know, because one thing I find fascinating about stories is once a story's set a certain way, people can't imagine it could be any other way. They think it always had to be that way. So what's funny is you're going to be thought of now as one of the greatest winners ever. But if people go and look at this first year in Fnatic, it's only at the end of the year you win, when you win the big CPL. Like, before that, it's just all heartbreak. It's like a million semi-finals, finals. Like, the joke is everyone else just taking the trophy from you over and over again. But that's also, you know, yep, as a competitor, you have to sort of learn through losing in a way, right? So what was this first period of Fnatic like? Because like I say, you're actually sort of like always this close.
As I said, I think you recall more here than I do. I kind of like the whole thing is a blur, because the only thing I remember is the win. It's kind of like you deleted the whole. But I think I remember we actually boot camping really hard for that CPL, I think in Gothenburg, for I think it was the longest boot camp I ever did. We lived together for 1 month, and I think that could be a result of us losing, as you mentioned, a lot of tournaments prior to that. That, shit, this isn't working out. What can we do differently compared to these other tournaments? So I think leading up to CPL, we rented an apartment where we all lived together for a month in Gothenburg, and I think perhaps that was needed to kind of sort out all the small issues we had. Because I think I could go into discussion, but I can't really remember the whole 2006.
That's all right.
I remember that boot camp, though, where we were really practicing hard. And I think that might have been what pushed us to perform as well as we did at CPL.
Even though, sadly, that was actually the CPL that never got paid out, and that's why everyone stopped going to CPLs famously, which sucks, but that's also reality. At the same time, though, like I said earlier in the convo, bearing in mind a year earlier was like the first time you go into Dallas and you go into the big... It must have been a big deal to still win a tournament there.
Yeah, it was. You finally made it. But at that time period, I also believe that other tournaments had become quite big in a sense. CPL was kind of losing its touch, but it was nice to win like what was considered the most prestigious tournament you could have won in Counter-Strike. Winning a CPL was considered like the greatest thing you could do. You had heat on, you had a lot of great players and great names winning CPL, so having that under your belt felt amazing. I think that's also what could have pushed this Fnatic team to perform as well as it did, because I think if we failed that one, I don't know what would have happened. I think changes would have happened much earlier than what it did.
Because for me, the following years, so the couple of years before Get Right and Gox and the big super team came in, this is the era. Man. Yeah, it was. Listen, it was all up and down, because it was a very... probably the most competitive era of CS, because at the same time, like, you had all these amazing top teams from all over the world. Like, obviously, this is when we had, like, Denmark and fucking Poland and Germany had a great team back then. This is a real tough era. And also, the circuit used to be enormous. You could go the whole world, China, Korea, South America. It could go everywhere. It's an enormous circuit. So in this era, I remember this was really when individually you made your name. Like, these were the years when everyone remembers you maybe at your peak.
Yeah, I think 2006 was one of my best years. I won a few awards back in 1.6. I won the best esport player of the year 2006 as a game show. I don't even remember. I think it was in Cologne, or perhaps, I don't know. But 2006-2007 also was a good year. I remember 2007 as being a bad year. For Fnatic, I remember us being...
Here's the thing, it started with the Poles beating you in a bunch of tournaments, because they won like the first couple of majors, but at the end of the year, you guys were winning everything. It was when you, like, late on in the year, you were winning like all those IEMs in America, and you went on like a little streak. You were like number one for like... you won like one of those ones in Korea, one of those, like, I can't remember what they called them, E-Stars or whatever, one of those things. You know, you had like a streak towards the end of the year when you were like the number one team. You're just remembering, unfortunately, losing the majors. If you lose a major, it's going to be in your mind, isn't it?
I think perhaps that is the case here. Because I remember, like, 2007 being, like, the worst year. Where teams were struggling really hard.
To me, that's more like 2008, because that was before you did the big gamble to get the Gux and Get Right move, which obviously that wasn't really, like, a Fnatic-type move.
Yeah. But they joined in 2009, I believe, right?
Yeah, Gux.
And, but, so 2008, like everything is such a blur. Like Counter-Strike was a lot of traveling back in the days. So you traveled.
There's a lot of tournaments, like I say. Yeah, you played a lot of LANs. Yeah. Oh yeah, let me give you a specific question then. One thing during this era that you definitely established was famously the nickname of Forrest was the SK Killer, because whenever you went against SK, the other fellow Swedish team used to tear him up every time. Yeah, I think they almost even knew we were going to do it, dude. I think they did.
Yeah, I know. Like we even had a tournament. Like my teammates were calling me. I knew, and I was like getting boosted from people like telling me that I'm the SK Killer. You know? Okay. I was thinking, like, my motivation got up because I knew, like, I was wrecking pistol. I have so many highlights against SK that it's like, it's almost stupid how many highlights I have against these guys. But yeah, I was wrecking havoc against the Swedish team. I don't know why I was so good against them specifically. Even up till that point where Spawn just goes full tilt and wants to break my finger, he doesn't realize the camera is recording.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just being like a nightmare to them. Like during this whole stint, but yeah, I remember having a really good time playing against Swedish team most of the times. But I think NIP had our numbers though. SK was our team we beat, but I think NIP was being the our set in this case. Then, for example, where the rivalry would keep on being played out, where Set would beat me one a lot of times. So NIP was a very tempting team to join back in the days as well.
I can tell you though, mate, here's what people don't know is that like that when I was in SK and we got that news that like Forrest and Get Right are joining, all I can tell you is all those, this is how you know that whether they were keeping a cool face before, they were almost like fucking high-fiving me like, holy shit, like, cause it's like, we don't have to play against anybody more, it's on our team now, like finally. By the way, what you say there though is a story a lot of people don't know. Let's get into it, because there's a famous story no fan knows. This is not even known among fans, which goes like this. So people might remember, right, that Zet famously went to America, joined Complexity and joined CGS. But what they don't know, Forrest, is there's a story that at the end of that year, you were going to make a super team, right? It was going to be like you, Zet. It was going to be like literally like on paper, it's like the HLTV.org fan dream. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you make those stupid ones like a Kogu with like Neo. But it was going to be real. It was going to be like a super team, right? And Spawn and everyone.
Exactly. I don't know why I didn't do it. Like, till this day, it's like one
rock. Oh, it's going to be the great what if, right? Yeah, like, what the fuck would that be like?
But back in the days, I was, like, super loyal. Always been loyal throughout my whole career. But anyways, yeah, so the story goes, like, Robin sits me down. We're after tournament. I don't remember which one. We're in this, like, a hot tub on the, like, rooftop or something. Some freaking tournament, man. We're drinking beers. Everyone's having a good time. And we start talking, like, all Swedish players. This is where you would try and fish players. Like, at the after parties, this is where you fish players.
Yes,
back in the
days. Exactly.
You would get drunk. You would talk a little bit. Oh, this could be so good, man. But he starts talking, and he was like, dude, I got this. We have a sick team if you want to join. So it was Wally, it was Spawn, it was Robban, it was Seth, it was me. And if that would have come to realize, I mean, it would have. When I think about it, like now, like what stopped me, man? And it was also playing for NIP. NIP was like the Swedish team you wanted to play for.
Sure.
So I really don't know why I didn't do it, but that team was insane. But they made the team still. They had Wally, they had Robban, they had Spawn, they had Seth, I think, and then they went with, was it Inns? No, well, not Inns. They went with some, I can't remember who they went for. Oh, did Seth not play in NIP then?
No, then he went. Yeah, he went and joined Complexity, like I said, to do CGS instead.
Oh, okay, he left. Okay. Yeah, that would have been a crazy team. It could have been. It could have happened. That is the big what if.
Thing is, though, like you say, it does touch on a theme of your career, though, which is like you are. I mean, in English, the saying is like loyal to a fault, because sometimes it means that, like, look, it's one thing to be loyal when it makes sense for both people and say, oh, you helped me, I help you. But sometimes, like, other people would leave you if they had a better offer or something. And you've had plenty of times you could have been on other teams. Like, I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute, but the only reason you left for that was because of some other drama. It wasn't, you didn't choose to leave. You probably stayed there your whole career, right?
Yeah, probably would have. 100%. There's a drama happening. I can't remember. It was something about Karn and DSL.
Do you want to get into it? Let's just do it, because I wanted to talk about this topic anyway. So basically, here's how we'll start out, right? like we said earlier, the weird thing about this dude is it's funny that you were looking at Nip and thinking, wow, that's like the great Swedish name. Because what's funny is, you know, in the modern day, I actually saw a comment that you'd like, which is when I went back, I saw a video where it was about when you were in SK, and the comment on it just said, as a fan, as like a YouTube comment, it was just like, wow, he was in SK. And what's funny is, it was when you were in Fnatic, and it was when you were in SK, and the clip was from Fnatic, and the guy goes, wow, he is in Fnatic. And obviously at the time, I'm like, well, he's not SK, it's Fnatic Forest. What are you talking about? But I always think it's wild that everyone thinks you're NIP Forest, because to me, you're obviously Fnatic Forest, because you were in the team for like 5 years. That was the main part of your career at the time. Mm. So I'm sure at the time, like, that was your home team. And then similarly, like, SK, like, because one thing I get the vibe now is, because of this drama, which we'll get into in a second, I get the vibe it sort of soured a little bit, some of your time in Fnatic, right? Like, I've noticed that I've brought it up to you a few times over the years. It feels like, because of the way it ended, like, maybe something spoiled a little bit or something about your time there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think here. I think me and Gutright, or me, Gux, and Gutright, I believe it was, all three wanted to elevate, or I wanted, this was like one of the times I wanted to actually do a change, because I think we could have become a so much better team. So what we wanted to do was to remove, I think it was either DSN or Karn, I don't remember who.
I think it was DSN initially, but eventually it could have been both if they were going to stick together, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we wanted to replace one of them, yeah? Because we wanted to elevate. I wanted to elevate because this, like, yes. We had to get right. We had me. We could have, like, pushed super hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So we wanted to do a change, and this is, like, one of the few times I actually, like, wanted to do, like, a change where, like, we can become so much better. So I think we brought it up. It just didn't match with anyone. DSN and Karn, as I said, they're a team here. They had the support from Fnatic. Or Fnatic were supporting Karn and DSN at this point more so than me and Getright. So they rather had us leave and kept DSN and Karn. And so I think that's where it kind of got like a little bit ugly. Yeah, we weren't like super nice friends, or because they felt betrayed of our initial thought. And in a sense, I guess I can understand why they feel so. But at the same time, it is a profession. It happens. You will get, like, people will get replaced. It's just how the business work. But I can understand where they come from with that, why they feel betrayed. We left to SK, and they. I think also they said they were gonna stop playing initially in Fnatic and bring in a new team. But then they decided they wanted to stay anyways and play. And they brought in Pita and Gook stayed with them, I believe.
Right. He joined a little bit later. They had Delpan initially, but you guys got Delpan after, if you remember.
So he left in this time period. Yes. Okay, so for Gux didn't join us in SK, did he?
No, because that's the thing. If you remember, because Gux had been in SK and he had that drama when he joined you guys again with the contract. Like, Alex just wouldn't let him join because he just, you know, it's like a rare case of a beef. Like, yeah, he was like, fuck that guy, he's not joining. So I even remember naively asking, like, can Gux join? It was like, no. It's like, oh, well, we'll take Geraint Forrest anyway, you know.
But at this time, I felt like we did, for me and Getro, we did a solid upgrade, because at this time, I think, with Robin, FaZe, and Alan, I think I saw myself as like we created now a super team in Sweden, what was considered, because Alan was a really good player. FaZe was a, like, this solid anchor player that was unmatched at this time. And you had Robin, one of the staples of in-game leaders.
Dude, I actually thought FaZe was a mad underrated player. Like, mate, in the modern day, like, I guess people threw the players like the Zipnixes of the world. They kind of appreciate those players now. Like, mate, back then, unless you were the guy in the frag movies, no one cared. Like, this guy was really good, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was really good. He was anchoring sides, as I said, and he would always get like two, three kills with him. Definitely always had a kill with him when people were attacking him, and he was just being an annoyance to people when he was anchoring sites. So he was a very strong player to have in a team. And Alan, if you were compared to a player today, I would see Alan as a res in NIP today. Kind of similar place that he could pop off, but it's also very, like, unstable. He doesn't always perform. He, like, up and down, a lot of up and down, but a very explosive player when he do pop off. Sadly, his stint with us ended shortly. But what I wanted to say is that we created a super team, right? Fnatic decided they brought in Pita, they brought in, was it Humor?
Exist.
Exist, they brought in Exist, yep. And Delpa, right? And I was like, ha ha, who are, like, they brought in these guys? What a joke, man. We're gonna destroy. So we were boot camping, hardcore boot camp with Test Game for the first tournament of the year. We were practicing so much, and I've never played so much Counter-Strike in my entire life. I had like 160 hours going into this. Everyone in SK had 140, 100. I can't do the math. We had a shit ton of hours. We were super prepped. We go into this tournament and we lose in the group stage. We just went out. I think I don't even think we won a game. We just lost straight up, two games in a row. Bam, bada bim, bada boom. We're out. And I remember, what the hell have I done?
It's, and the worst, like, thing is, Khan fucking won the tournament, didn't he? He was just like, what?
Exactly. So I was come to the part. Fnatic goes and win that fucking tournament. They go away. Karn and DSN with their smug faces. You know how Karn and DSN can be, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
All you need to know is this. This is what Karn's personality is like. Karn had never done an interview with me ever. And even though I'm on SK, you remember the rules. Fnatic's not supposed to do interviews with SK. All you need to know is this. Think of the reason why he would do this. Because SK has lost and he's just won, Karn and Sam Matthews agreed he could do an interview with me that one time. Because you can imagine he was the smuggest guy of all time. Exactly. Like, he thought that was like his moment, wasn't he? Because that's what's weird about that story is, in the longer run, actually, they were wrong. Like, your team was the better one. You would have SWC. Exactly. Like, you're actually right. Like, they were. By the way, I think they'd even admit now. Like, DSN retired that year. Khan retired the year after. Like, they weren't at the end of their careers. The problem was they weren't ready in that moment to let it go, right? Whereas, as you say, like, even though short term, it made them look like they were right and you were wrong. Like, you were, like, fundamentally, the principle was right. Like, they were sort of the end of their time.
Yeah. Because once we, after that tournament, Alan, I think that Fnatic team kind of disappeared really quick. Delpan joined us fairly quick that summer. That same year, that was in the beginning of the year, February, they won that tournament. I think in the summer, beginning of the summer, Delpan joined us, and that's when we really popped off as a team. But yeah, it's just a funny story because I think they were so driven by, like, that revenge, or that they wanted to prove us wrong was so strong that they played like the absolute best Counter-Strike they could ever have played in that tournament. And that was all driven by the fact they wanted to prove me and get right wrong. And as soon as they'd done that, it was like they were like done. They were like,
exactly. Done. Yeah. It's like the end of Lord of the Rings. It's done. It is done.
It is done. And they realized, shit, no, we can't play anymore. We're not good. We're not good enough to play. But yeah, it was funny as hell. But yeah, as I said, we turned out to be, that era was with SK was a really good, really good era of Counter-Strike from us. It was really nice to actually do a switch team and still perform at that level we did. I think me and Getright, FaZe, Robin, and everyone was just, I think that team could actually be a contender for one of the best Swedish lineups, because that was one hell of a lineup we had, and the tournaments we won were so strong. But I don't think people really remember that SK time a lot either. It's either,
no,
like,
I think another problem with that, another problem that team seems to have is people forget, even if you didn't win the tournament, you were nearly always second or third. Like, that team was super consistent.
Yeah. We were, it was like, people, it seems like people remember, either they remember Fnatic, they remember me from Fnatic if they are like old school fans, or they remember me from NIP and CSGO. But that SK kind of like, it's always like, it's deleted. People don't know. Yeah. And 2 years, I ended my 1.6 career in SK, and I would have played there much longer. If 1.6 were still a game, or still had the money and the drive and everything, I would probably still be playing SK.
Yes.
Till this day. That was the end, but it was a good run.
Right. Obviously, I've tried generally, you'll notice, to keep the topics together. So I haven't talked much about Getright at the moment. Obviously, the first year with Getright was that year in Fnatic in 2009. The last couple of years you played in that team before you did the SK Super Team, like you said. Right. When you first met Getright, this is my question for you. Who was this guy? Because I always say, like, he's another person where when you're a superstar and everyone tells you you're brilliant and you figure out your image and you get your personality right, everyone can look super awesome. But he was another guy that was like, he was a strange guy. He was a bit nerdy. He was one of those guys where I always felt like he was a bit of an outsider to some of the social groups in the scene, and he was almost the guy who was like himself just driven to prove everyone, like, I'm actually the best, like, I'm as good as you guys. Like, he was a weird guy, right?
Yeah, he was an oddball coming into Counter-Strike, but I think he was just like, he's very misunderstood. I think because now I know him, right? And now you know him. But when you first, like, at that time, I think he had only been playing computers. He, like, kind of in the same sense as I did when I started in the pro scene. But he was, haven't really socialized with people. He didn't really understand like the lingo or how to act or behave, or he was doing his own thing. He was being his own individual, which was awesome in a sense as well, because he was very charming in that sense, that or like turned out to be super charming, because a lot of people do love him for the character he has, you know. But at that time, people were a bit more, as I said, Counter-Strike back in the days was very closed. It was like you didn't get into groups, man. People had friend groups. You didn't enter those just because you're good at Counter-Strike. You need to really vibe on a personal level as well. But even if you're a good dude or genuine nice person, you wouldn't even get been let into these those groups. So he was always left out, it felt like. And he was also one of the few Swedish prospects that was actually dominating before joining like big teams. He was wrecking havoc together with Threat in Lions, I believe it was. And even prior to Lions, he was just destroying every game he played. He dropped like mad 25, 30 frags.
Oh, he had all the best demos. He was in all the mixed teams, all those lands, doing everything.
Every single game, he was an absolute madman. And I think it was which team gave him the shot first? It was SK who gave him the shot first. Right?
Yes, he temporarily played Spawn, and then they kicked him out again. And he would join you.
Yeah, okay. And he only played one tournament with SK, and they kicked him out. And I think the reason they kicked him out was because of his personality, because they didn't like him. As an individual,
I think they just thought he was too young because he was like 5-6 years younger than the rest of them.
Yeah. But I realized when he was playing the small stint in SK and when he was playing in Lions that shit. If he's gonna keep being in opposition, like not in the same team as me, I'm gonna be in trouble. Like I'm gonna be in real trouble here if I'm not playing with this guy. He's gonna be like a menace to me on a whole different level that I've ever experienced. Not even Seth, not even Neo. Like no one would come close. Like I was genuine. Like I need this guy in Fnatic.
Yeah.
I brought it up, or someone brought it up. We just said they let go of him, and we just instantly just grabbed that chance the moment they let go, and I think we brought him quite close there. I think he played a small stint in Lions, and then we brought him in, and I was so happy. And once after playing with him, I realized that holy shit, is this guy good at Counter-Strike? And then. Still, a little bit. It's not. He was Christopher. He was like. Well, I'm not gonna say weird or odd or anything like that. He was the way he is, and it was just not that people had a hard time to accept that. But it was also very refreshing to see a guy who does his own thing. As you said, he was super driven. He had a drive that none of these cool dudes, whatever you want to call them, I don't know where I'm going to go with this, but he had a drive that no one else did.
I mean, this is way, like I said, this is way before there was money. Like if you're driven here, it's just because you really want to win. It's not, you don't need doing it to win like $1 million or something. Yeah. Like at the time, like, yeah, if people don't know, I often say this as an interviewer. One of the things that was a bit whack about esports was sometimes players would give the vibe of like, oh, you're taking it too seriously. I'm just good at video games. But you were like, bro, we're trying to build something. We're trying to make it like sports. Mm-hmm. And he already understood it was like sports. Like he knew, you know, those majors are going to matter one day. They'll be like a Hall of Fame, and you know, he kind of could see this. I'm serious. I think people think I'm joking. He kind of really understood that, like, this was a big deal.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he was way, way ahead of the curve in terms of realizing what this is going to become. He was absolutely nuts, and I think he also tried to, because he was also very upfront to doing interview. He was doing every, like, even though he was like, his English wasn't good.
Yeah.
He was nervous. He did everything, man. He just wanted to be seen. He wanted to show the world who he is and how good he is at Counter-Strike. And he just kept on pushing that narrative his whole career. He was doing everything. He was always pushing the limits of what was possible or demanded from a pro player. He always tried to build it. Like, he was one of the first trying to build his brands as well. It feels like he actually started to push like brand building and trying to become something with his brand. So I think, like, in a sense, we should be very lucky to have gotten a guy like Getred into Counter-Strike, because I don't think, okay, we obviously have Simple. I think Simple and Getred is very similar, in my honest opinion.
In terms of the drive and the sort of mindset, they agree.
Their mindset and everything I see in Simple, I've seen it in Getred as well. I think they have like the same gonna sound cheesy as hell, but it feels like they have the same aura or something. They project the same thing. It's just super.
Oh, awesome. These are guys. If people don't know, you don't have to tell these guys to practice. They're just gonna be practicing anyway. They're just crazy like that. They're totally self motivated.
Yeah, they are. They are 100%. They're driven by a demon, man. It's incredible.
By the way, on this line, you said it there, but something I always want to ask you is, I also got a vibe, this is where I actually think you're ahead of the game, is back then, people did used to just think of it like, we're good at video games, and actually people always tried to cut players and make super teams and constantly change, because the vibe back then was, if you lose, just get the best player from that team to your team and see if you win, right? One of the things I noticed was, I feel like you were one of the people early on who actually figured this out, like, if you play with someone like Getright, you're amazing, you've been amazing for years, he's looking like he's going to be fucking amazing for the next 5 years, why not just stick together the whole time? That's a way smarter strategy. Like, it's way better to be together. And like, because I've actually tried explaining this to younger pros now for us, like I've tried to tell, they didn't all listen, sadly. Like I tried to tell Elysian Twists when they were together, like, mate, if you guys can stick together, just play your whole careers, like you're not going to get a teammate better than that. Like what you'll happen is, in a few years, if you split apart, I mean, the joke is now in Elysian will be thinking this, you'll watch like Twists win the major, you'll be like, fuck, I should be there, that should be my teammate.
But I came to that realization. Honestly, I've been speaking this in a lot of interviews as well. I came to the realization very quickly that I need to play with this guy for as long as I like possibly can, because I know that like with my skill and with his we're gonna dominate hard. And that's why I think when he also wanted to leave Fnatic for SK, there was like no doubt in my mind that I'm just going with you and whatever journey. So when it's also when we're starting to come into Counter-Strike GO here, when he wanted to, so I was about to stop playing Counter-Strike because 1.6 wasn't paying enough good money, CSGO was just about to be released, and he had his offer, you want to play Counter-Strike GO, and it's Getright asking me. I was like, hell fucking yes, let's do this. If he want to go on this journey, I will join him on this journey. But I think people need to realize when they find a solid teammate or when they see something special in somebody, I don't think you should be shameful to actually try and stick together, because I think you both will benefit. And as you said, when you split up, one of you is going to end up looking at the other guy and thinking, holy fuck, that could have been me. Exactly as you said. And today's a good example is Twist and Elise. If you said that to them, they should stick together.
The only thing is, though, even when we say that, like, you want to stick there, you couldn't have known you'd be with the guy for 10 years, though. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, I don't think you can never... I don't think you're only thinking like short term, right? But I knew I wanted to play with him. I need to play with him. I don't want him to be in another team. I just know that I knew that I wanted to play with him. I never knew it was going to be for this long, but I don't regret a single minute. I think me and him have formed something truly special. Like throughout Fnatic, throughout SK, throughout CSGO, we have accomplished absolutely everything we can together. And I think it's a beautiful thing as well.
Right, before we go on to some of the CSGO stuff, I just wanted to ask a quick last question about 1.6, which is this. Because in so many times you did in the final meet like Na'Vi or the Poles, these were basically the people who were in all the finals in the last year. In fact, one of the things I always say I thought was quite cool about 1.6 was you almost never got like fluke teams make the major final. It would always be like the actual best teams, like number one and number two playing each other. And you got to kind of see like, it was awesome. So one thing, the best things was though, you got these real battles and it wasn't like you just played a guy once. You might play them like three or four times in big finals over like 3 years. So people might not realize it was back and forth. You've won some majors over the Poles. You obviously won the big IEM, etc. They've won ones over you, like obviously famously that World Cyber Games was a big one, etc. Like, how would you describe, like, how did you think of that team? What was the rivalry like in that regard? Because they were a very different team to yours.
Against the Poles?
Yes.
Yeah, the Poles. I think what they had, they had this like camaraderie that we didn't have. They were like, it felt like they were blood brothers, man. They could die for each other every single second. I mean, like in real life also, they had this vibe about them that it's a do or die. Every single game is like do or die for them. With our team was more like, we're good at Counter-Strike. We can replace you. You can be replaced. Like we have a lot of Swedish players. We can just pick and choose. It's like a goodie bag of people, but they were like this, they were like a family, man. And their mentality was so tough to get under their skin. You knew, like, when you played against these guys, you knew there was always going to be a battle. You were never going to, like, just steamroll them. You were never just going to win, like, 16-4 or 16-5 and just, like, be done with it. No. These guys, they were tough to beat. You really have to pour your heart out when you were playing against these guys. And I think that was the strength of their team, that was so hard to just make them accept defeat. Man, you could be thinking like, please, just lose, man. You're gonna lose this game. Just lose, man. Why are you fighting back? Just lose. But they always gave you one hell of a ride. And I think that was their biggest strength. And I think because they were so close, except for when Luke, I think they had an internal issue with Luke or whatever, but they still had that core of, even when Pasha got brought in, they had something special that I don't think we're going to see in Counter-Strike again. Like that family type, they'll do everything for each other. I don't think we'll ever see that again in Counter-Strike, actually. But that was the thing that was so hard when we were playing against them, that feeling that they never, ever gave up easily.
By the way, on the topic of when we were talking earlier about different players, and like, it's true, you can never remember, even though some players we might remember were good, like you can't remember always, did fans appreciate them? Like obviously, like stats, like you say, didn't exist in the same way. So like, for example, back then we had the very simple stats like kills and deaths. So basically you just knew who fragged out. You didn't really know in the game if someone did like entries or opening kills, or no one knew any of that shit. You were just guessing at that. So one thing I actually think as well, as people probably don't know about this era, is if you go and look at a lot of these big finals against the Poles, against Na'Vi, I actually think one angle that's very underrated is, it isn't just that like if the Poles win, that means Neo outperformed Forest. It doesn't mean if Na'Vi won, Markov necessarily like smashed the whole team. Another angle I thought those two teams had is two players. It's Lord for the Poles and Senya for the Na'Vi, right? On paper, again, if you look at raw stats, you'd be like, isn't this the worst player? I would describe them now. That guy's a bit like if you see like Perfecto and Na'Vi now, if you remember obviously Zipnix and Astralis, like that's what these guys would do, is like they were supposed to be the worst player, but man, they would just win clutches all day long. Like you were like, how's this guy winning like a 1v1 in like the major final or something? It was ridiculous. Like these players are special, you know.
It's so funny that you mentioned Lord, man, because I've been thinking people underestimated him as well, because I think Lord was straight
they
up.
They used to ask for him to be cut all the time on the forums, didn't they? Were like, cut him out and bring in some other player. Yeah, of course. But
he was so nasty to play against in like clutches and stuff. But just overall, he had a very special play style, a very like unreadable, so hard to read play style. Like, you couldn't read him in one-on-ones. He was super... overall being a menace when you were playing. So it's funny that you mentioned Lord, man. I'm with you 100%. And Senya, I saw him more as a aggressive type player as well. He was more like in your face. That's the sense I got when he was playing, more like in your face. In a sense, I think that I should, like, if I meet him in a one-on-one, I'm going to win. But somehow he managed like to kill you and you get frustrated. Like, how is this guy killed? Why?
Right.
How did he kill me? Like, why? And he was just being a frustrating player, like a fly in your room that you can't get rid of. He was just always around, buzzing around and being an annoyance. And he also was very good when we're talking about the vocal parts, about trying to trigger...
there's that famous picture where he gave to the MTW cards. That was pretty wild,
He did that to us as well. He did it to them. I think the picture is... we're sitting on this side, they're sitting here, and there's a thin wall. He just walks around and he just goes... fuck.
In the middle of a game. It was like after you went around. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in the middle of the game, he just goes screaming like, fuck you guys, fuck you guys.
And you just sat there like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but he goes like this, you see, like he goes full rage mode. Like you literally see rage. It screams. And I was like, holy shit, let's go, man. You get hyped up. You feel But so he was one of those players that really wanted to get into your head by screaming and shouting and being annoying, but also incredible, nasty players. All those teams, as you said, had players. It's not that they only had star players. There was a whole... all types of beasts in the top teams of Counter-Strike. All different types of beasts were playing. MTW, famous for... they were always innovative. MTW, the Danish guys, was always innovative. They were tough to beat strat-wise. They had Sonic, but they didn't have enough super amazing aimers until Trace joined. Trace kind of... a funny thing, actually. I did play with Trace. I don't think people remember that.
Last year, yeah.
Exactly. Last year in SK. Small stint, but yeah. Yeah, you're 100%. A lot of different nasty players in all those teams.
What about this then? Because one question I have goes like this. You touched on it earlier, so it's a perfect topic. Actually, technically, there should never have been a NIP CSGO with Forrest, Get Right, Exist, and those players. Like, basically, if SK had wanted to, they could have, you were already under contract to them from 1.6. They could have just either kept that going or they could have signed you for CSGO. But obviously, this is the part people forget. You know, people sometimes now make fun of that old. It was a comment, for, I think, from an interview where Zonic in the first year of CSGO was like, CSGO will never be as big as 1.6. And famously, people now make it like, oh, what an idiot. It's like, that was a totally reasonable take back then. No. We all thought, sadly, that this game was not only worse, it was going to be smaller because like IEM dropped it, etc. And it was just going to be like, it was like going back in time 10 years. You were just at small lands again. And in fact, the joke is, we were closer to like what you were saying about Dota. It was like a side game. Like League of Legends was the game, then StarCraft was the game. So actually, look, I don't totally blame SK. I can see why they were like, maybe CS isn't the future anymore. Maybe it is League of Legends or whatever. But like, if they'd wanted to, you could have just made that team in SK, right? In fact, I'm sure even some of the players, if people don't know, I think FaZe even tried to play CSGO initially in some other teams. So I think you even could have made a team with maybe even Robban, FaZe, or some of those guys, right? You think it would have happened if they'd have wanted to?
If SK would have said, I think Robban was already checked out. When 1.6 was done, he was already checked out. I think he wanted to... to earn money, otherwise I don't think he wanted to do the whole thing again. The thing about Counter-Strike in the later years was that the money was starting to get really bad in terms of organizations were paying less and less. So Counter-Strike Go was just a big gamble. But yes, I think if SK would have put in the cash and said, "Hey, we want you guys to play CS:GO, we're gonna up," like if they would have kept like a reasonable salary, I think people would have stayed. We would have been playing CS:GO instead for sure. But I also think that when, as Sonic said, that I don't think anybody expected Counter-Strike Global Offensive to become the game it is today, because it was absolutely shit in the beginning when it was nothing compared to Counter-Strike. If 1.6 was dying, who was reasonable enough to think that if 1.6, one of the greatest games ever to be like exist, like esport wise, like it had everything, the mechanics, you had everything, perfect shooting, everything feels nice, and then here comes along a game that is not even fully developed. It looks way worse. It feels worse. The mechanic, everything is just worse. Everything is worse. Yeah. Counter-Strike 1.6 can't survive in this environment. How could a game like Global Offensive survive?
Exactly.
It's a reasonable take to think that if 1.6 can't survive, why should this game? How can this game survive? Because it had nothing going for it in the beginning. It had absolute zero. Even when we were playing, when I started to play CS:GO before, or when this NIP thing came into discussion, I was trying out CS:GO a little bit, and we were playing a little bit of Gathers. As I said, FaZe was playing. There were a lot of 1.6 players actually trying it out as well, but a lot of players still committed to 1.6. I didn't even play the last.
No, you're right. All the polls and Fnatic and those were playing six months or something. Yeah, while you were in CS:GO.
They were still playing 1.6. I didn't even play those tournaments. So like Fnatic had this whole a lineup with Kharigan. You had what was the name? The Upper Freeze. You had Moddy. Yeah. You had Exist. There was a whole mess, man. But I was SK was done. I don't remember the last tournament we did, but we were done. Everybody was checked out and. I was about to start studying and working again because I thought, like, hey, 1.6 is like, it's done and dusted. Here comes along CSGO. It wasn't really my, I played some Gathers, I tried it out. I wasn't really feeling it. It felt like a bad copy of Source.
It felt way more like Source, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it did. It truly did. And I thought, man, the nades were acting different. It was just so much new stuff to learn. I thought to myself, like, nah, this is not for me. I was never.
Do you remember when the moment was it started to feel good or like there's something to this? How long do you think that took?
I think around, it was released in all, I think around the time, not the first tournament, the first tournament we played, I would say, it has started to feel good. Like the first iteration of Counter-Strike Global Offensive was horrendous. But they did a lot of good updates. I think when it started to do those special version of the maps where they kind of removed the clutter and the fog. Yes. From the maps and kind of made it look a little bit more clean is when I started to get a more feel of okay, this is actually doable. They're listening, they're doing stuff to improve. And also with the help, I think when Fifthrun and Fry, when I started to play Gathers with them and they kind of let me know a little bit how the nades work, how you can utilize the Source engine in a way that I didn't understand because we weren't playing on the same engine, but I believe we didn't play on the same engine. We did, I don't know. That's when I started to think, when those maps removed the fog and everything and it looked a little bit more clean, and that's when I saw the potential of the game and that the developers were actually super committed and very commutative in the sense that they wanted to improve the game and try to understand what we wanted to see in the game. And I think over the course of all those years, the Counter-Strike Global Offensive, like today's Global Offensive, is so much better than...
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like 2014's Global Offensive. It just looks like, now it looks, for me, it looks like Global Offensive, you don't need to change a thing. I think it looks amazing.
No, it's great still, yeah.
The movement, like, it feels like all the kinks now that you had in 1.6 is like, it's being shown now. You have the movement side of the game,
yes,
people.
Great.
You have all those small tricks now that you kind of missed in the beginning of CSGO, but now you see these plays that makes individual stand out, that you can see, okay, this is the play style of Simple. You can see when it's Simple playing now. The way you could see it was Neo playing in 1.6. You could see instinctively without knowing, like seeing the name, you can see who's moving around in game. And I think today's Counter-Strike is absolutely beautiful. I hopefully heard about the rumors, like all the rumors. I don't really care about rumors much. I want to see results before I dive in. But hopefully, if something is about to come, hopefully it doesn't change too much, because I think Counter-Strike is an absolutely beast state right now in terms of gameplay and individual performance, like how you can perform as an individual.
I can't remember where I saw this. It was either like on Twitter or an interview or something, but I saw this recently, so I want to ask you, because it's such a weird contrast to what people would think of historically. But I saw there was a story that said, because they came from Source for Flying and Freiburg, that before the first tournament, the Valencia, that you guys obviously won, and like you were obviously, like, was your streak era where you never lost, and famously you always beat very games. I heard that before, because they thought, like, they're the gods of Source, they were actually, like, scared to go to this tournament. Like, we shouldn't go, they're going to beat us, like, they'll be ahead of us.
What?
Like, is this real? Because it sounds ridiculous now, obviously.
No, they were, even speaking Swedish, because it's so true. No, they were overhyping them, or not over. They were scared of playing very games. I, like, me and Getro and Exist were just like laughing, like thinking, like, what the hell? Like, do you know, like how good can it be? Do you know, like, who we are? Like, we are also demons, man. But they were like, literally, no. They were like, guys, you don't understand. These guys will bring their own computers, and they will fuck you up here. And we were like, and then we see them roll in, you know, as they said, walking in with the computers. And we were like, okay. But yeah, Fifa and Fiber were super scared, because I heard, or I know for a fact, that Very Games were very, very dominant in Source, I believe. And so they were genuinely scared, because they would have this team coming into Counter-Strike GO, and CSGO was... more similar to Source than it was 1.6, so they thought that we would get wrecked, man. But I think individual performance is not something they were used to in Source either, because here comes Getrid and Forest.
Indeed. No, there's some truth to it. Here's the thing, though. One thing I think was actually interesting about that to me is, one thing I think people never really give you guys credit enough for is, you were amazing at 1.6. And then, yes, I'm sure there was a few months where we didn't see you play and you were starting to get good at CSGO. But, like, in terms of official play, because you were winning every game, like, if someone followed 1.6, it's like, you guys just, like, had no transition period at all. Look, you were just the best in CSGO. Whereas people will know a lot of the really great 1.6 players, either they never made it in CSGO, or they were just all right players. They weren't the best. So this was like, you were actually competing against a totally different set of people. It was mainly the Source people, actually. And in this case, by the way, in our game, in 1.6, French people were almost irrelevant. Like, they emulate us. Someone was like one-off team, you know, like a one-time to the French were the best in early CSGO. Like, this was now, these were the main rivals, right?
Yeah, 100%. Very Games was our rivals. It was the team we always played against that was gonna be our toughest opponent. And I think, but I don't know why we got the numbers on them. I don't know, I think we were just so much more talented, or like. Our aim, I think we just played better, like individual. We had better individuals. I think we could just destroy in a sense. I don't think they did. We could take over games in a sense that I don't think they could do the same way in Source. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments or whatever. I might be totally wrong. I didn't really watch Source, but it really feels like Getrite could really literally take over games here in Global Offensive. And it didn't feel like they had an answer for that. But it felt like they were a more structured team. They needed everything to go exactly they have the way they had planned out, more so than Swedish Counter-Strike, as we have learned now, is more like we go do this and we're more like in the zone and try to always adapt what is happening inside the round and taking everything a little bit more on the fly, if you would say so. So they were more structured, and I think we would interrupt their structured game style and gotta kind of get them caught off guard. And I think that's why we got the numbers on them, because they couldn't really prepare for us, and we were always inside and messing up their routines or whatever you want to call it.
Right, I've got an angle on this I want to set up. Right, so. Obviously, like, look, if you disagree with any of this, it's obviously free for you to give your take. I'm just setting up a premise where some of it's speculation.
Yeah, go
like,
for
when
it.
When I look in the 1.6 days, even though you won a lot of tournaments and you won the best players and you were in some of the best teams ever, for sure, in Fnatic and SK, some of those times where the Poles would win or Na'Vi would win, it did feel like those teams sometimes were a little bit more clutch in the like big final or the major or whatever. It's why a lot of these teams won so many. So I sometimes got the vibe back then that sometimes maybe these teams could get in your head or get right's head, or these, you know, they could be the ones where it's like, fuck, that's always the guy that's beating me. Because if people don't know, once someone beats you a bunch of times, it does start to feel like it's inevitable, or fuck, I'm just cursed against this guy. But one thing I thought was really cool in CSGO was I thought you guys got the chance to do that, because not only did you do it to Very Games early on, but in my opinion, it's funny they became the greatest team ever, the Astralis Core, because people will forget, dude, there were years where you guys tortured them. Like, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. They would come into the major, they were above you in the rankings, they might have even won the last tournament. Everyone knew if you played them, you were going to beat them. Even they knew that's almost like the fucking thing. Like, I feel like if this was a weakness ever, it became a strength in CSGO.
Yeah, no, but I think you're on point in that sense, that we that like that certain matchups in 1.6 definitely got into your head, that you almost get a little bit thrown off within your game style, maybe a little bit uncertain in your own skill sometimes. Like in some finals, you like, shit, it's gonna end up this like in this way, or holy shit, now they're really steamrolling. Like you can get thrown off because you know who you're playing against and you know what the type of damage they can do as a team, and you know, like, if it start going a certain way because you play this matchup so many times, that they are gonna like start winning. So definitely I think the mental side of things took a huge part in certain finals. Definitely think we cracked or crumbled under certain finals purely because of who we met, 100%. Like, if Na'Vi got off to a good start against, I think, like in the semifinal, was a semifinal, ESWC, Mark Love, for example, we were playing against them. He has absolutely destroyed me, and this is purely mind games. Like, I'm trying to do, I think it's mid-doors does too. He kills me, I think, 12 or 13 times in a row.
Yeah.
He kills me through double doors on does too. We smoke every single time. I go up, I jump up, I die. I go down, I die. I wait 5 seconds, I die.
Is this the most bullshit game of all time to play?
But that gets into your head. Like, that's why I start thinking. Yeah, but he reads it perfectly. He reads everything. He owns me. I was like a dog on a leash. I was his that game. I could do nothing. And it gets into your head, man, really bad. Sure. Every single round, I knew I was going to die. I could even drop my weapon to DSN or whoever it was I was playing B with. Just take everything, man. Don't buy anything. Just take everything. So, yeah, mental part is big in Counter-Strike. But as you said, I think once our dominance started in CSGO, I think we could also overcome a little bit and be the bullies this time around in CSGO. And I think it's also a very weird feeling knowing that, as you said, I think Klushnapolka was one of the biggest upsets we had against
TSM.
We had no business going on to beat them in that quarter. Quarterfinal.
It was quarters.
We had no business even like trying to beat them, but we beat them, and I think it's purely because we knew we were so confident that they were going to choke against us that we could just do whatever we wanted to do against these guys, even though they were 100% the better team. And they know it in their heart that they are the better team. They were like in the talks of winning that major. We were.
This is why, if people don't remember, that was the video where they were like crying in that van on the way back. Because they thought this was supposed to be like an easy game to win on paper.
Yeah, this was like we had no business being there. But as you said, that was just purely mental, like a mental warfare that happened. Like, even before the game even started, they saw the matchup. Probably we saw the matchup, we were excited, they were not as excited, because they were thinking, holy shit, they were starting to get nervous. I can almost imagine thinking like, oh my, oh, it's NLP, it's easy. But that's like what they're saying, like, oh, it's gonna be easy. Don't worry, guys. They're not as good anymore. But inside, they're
exactly
not speaking it. They're not yes saying it, but they're trembling inside, thinking like, oh shit, we could actually lose this one where we shouldn't. They're starting to doubt themselves within themselves. I think like the whole, so the battle already started and we won that game. Then we got absolutely smashed in the semis, I think, which rightfully so, because we had
yeah, of
no
course
business.
Exactly, yeah.
We had no business being yes there, but just because we got the matchup against TSM,
yes,
we could beat them on the yes mental thing, as you said. So
yeah, my joke is when you played Na'Vi in the semis, that was like the moment when like the Roadrunner looks down when it's off the cliff and it's like, oh shit, there's no ground there. And then you've got exactly like reality sets in, you know. Along these yeah lines though, a topic I definitely want to ask you about. Look, I will say you're not one of the like main offenders in this story. Like when I bring up the term Nip Magic Forest, now it's yeah a beloved term. Everyone loves it. It's on t-shirts. You guys are all yeah fucking loving it the last few years. Yeah. But if you remember when I first said that in like 2015 or whatever, like not only did Nip definitely not like it, but people like Geralt were even friends to my like, get the fuck away from me, like, because he used to think I was saying it like you were it was a fluke or something, you know, like it's like magic, yeah, like they shouldn't win or, you know. But actually what's funny is I think you guys in the end actually get exactly what I meant by that, dude. What yeah I meant was this quality, like, especially yeah think about those latter years, like 2016 and 2017, those are the years there's no way you should be winning like Auckland in those years, like no, that's like one of the big tournaments. So like I do think there was like a magical quality to that core, like something about that core way beyond how the players being the best, like it could still win even when the players weren't the best, right?
Yeah, Counter-Strike players are edgy, man. We can definitely be edgy people.
Certainly, yes.
But I think the term Nip Magic, like if you look back to the term now and kind of look back at the journey we did, I think Nip Magic fits the narrative very well. We did some matches that we had no business because of the qualities of the individuals we had in the team. We're able to pull it off, not by pure luck, but by the qualities we had as people or as players. That was that what made Nip Magic happen, because of the like the, that's how I think of
yeah, yeah
the term, like because of the qualities we had as individuals, we made the impossible possible because
yes
of like the individuals we had. I like the term, and I think now I don't think people look at it badly. As you said, we even printed it on t-shirts, man. I even have a YouTube video where I sit in the Nip Magic shirt, man.
There you go.
Looking solid. But yeah,
by the way, along these lines though, like something I want to tie it to is, like you were saying about loyalty and about playing with the right people, now people might know this because he actually revealed it when it was like the whole nothing in PayPal thing a few years ago, but dude, it was a behind the scenes secret for many years in CSGO that Fiflaren did not retire. He was fired by NIP. That's a story that has now been told. He told
yeah.
Like if it was up to you guys, you wouldn't have kicked him out, right? You would have kept going for like probably another year, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think we didn't have full control. I don't think any team has full control anymore in Counter-Strike, or never. I don't think any team has full control. But yeah, I think we would have stuck with Fiflaren for sure. I think that what really set it off was that event where we lost to Kukli, right? Like I think
yes.
1 month.
The SWC link.
Yeah, I think so. 1 month after he got banned or something, and was like the whole scenario where we lost to them in a mess.
Oh, that's right, because that annoys Fiflaren even more now, because now he's like, so I got kicked and the guy was cheating. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're right, yes.
Yeah. It's 100% right also.
We
went out by a team who had a cheater who, late, like 1 month later, once Fiflaren was kicked, he got banned.
He literally got backbanned,
And the guy who made this roster change happen was Kukli, because he kicked us out of the tournament, and then Kukli gets banned, and Fiflaren is out of the team. And now Fiflaren sits on the sidelines like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, but I think we still saw potential in that team. I think we could have made it work. I think we were still a really good team.
Sure.
It was just because we lost that, like we went out of tournament for like, maybe I think it was the second time during the whole NLP or during this small stint where we actually lose out in group stage, like an early exit. I think it was Swedish home, whatever. And they were like, this is not the results of NLP. And we, I guess we all agreed as well. Like, no, this is not where we want to be either. But we know we can perform better. But I think management had already decided that Fiflaren was to be replaced much earlier than what we, like, well, what anyone even expected that roster move should have happened. I think no one even thought about it. We just ended up being called into a room or something. And then Phil Foran, you're out. This guy's in. We had like no discussion. It was Michael Elliott who's being brought in, but that was not a decision by the team either. Michael Elliott joined in, and I mean, we did good as a team. We reached major finals. We won tournaments, and that's because we were still it's not like we were a bad team by any means. We were a really good team. Didn't matter who the fifth was, and I guess that kind of became a meme as well itself. And I think that also became something that was something that became very toxic within our team as well, because we.
Let me ask about that then, because basically that's one thing I wondered about. That almost looks like it becomes, you know, in English you call it like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like when you say like this is going to happen to me, it's almost like eventually you start to believe it. So yeah, no team famously, Cosfif Larin, this is why it's more of a key detail that he was fired. You guys didn't choose for him to leave. Because then everyone who gets added, if you would have chosen Fifth Larin, it's like, well, why is this guy here? So unfortunately, everyone who came in is the next fifth player. The famous scenario, as my joke was, it was like musical chairs. It's like he gets to like dance around for a while. Eventually that spot's gone and someone else comes in. But it's always the same four stay, and then a fifth player comes in, and they come in for a year, and then they go out, and it almost didn't seem, it didn't matter who they were, like Ali was good, maybe Pitt was okay, like it didn't matter how good they played. It's just the problem is when the four are too tight together,
yeah,
I mean in this case the fifth guy can't break the group, right? So it's always going to be him who gets replaced in a way.
Kind of goes back to 1.6. Even it was, even though I think we were as welcoming as we could have been into everyone, I think we as the core were striving not for those second places anymore. We were not satisfied even like being second or third, and in our mind being second or third was not because of like the core. It must have been like somebody else, in this case the fifth player. We were always striving to, like, so we won tournaments with Fifth Larin. Why can't we win with you? You know, it kind of became a, like a toxic mentality in itself within the core of striving to become better. But I think the best we could have been was with Alu. I don't know, really. I can't really understand what happened there either. I think with Alu, we definitely.
He told me that team actually in scrims was just tearing people up. And there was a point where you were actually the best, even though maybe in the tournament you didn't win.
Yeah, we were a really good team with Alu. I think he fit really well into the team. He was calm and collected. He could stand his own ground as an individual. Even socially, he was very funny to be around. Everybody enjoyed spending time with him as well. I don't really know what happened. It was just went south later at the year. Even when like we came second to Fnatic, who was an incredible team at that year. We beat them in the upper bracket, sent them down to the lower. We meet them in the final.
Yeah, Fragment Masters. Yeah,
we lose that final, and then I was just out. I don't know. I can't even remember what happened. Like it's just like, and we've been in a major final with him, where we, arguably, where you look back at it again, a major we could have won, could have, should have, would have, a major we should have won, perhaps. You know, this is like a story that I don't know. We were just striving. I don't know what happened, but it was like, I think the mentality of not, it was not us who decided the fifth runner should have left.
Sounds like that sowed the seed, to mess it up for everyone else after this. But understandable, circumstances.
Yeah, but I think so. Kind of like we had no control anyway. Sure. So I think it just became like a bad circle of energy. I don't know how to put it in words, but it was just became weird. We were still a good team, but we just couldn't find that final missing piece. Apparently, Mike Lilla wasn't it. Ali wasn't. I thought Ali was it. Apparently, something happened. I don't think anybody really understands what happened there. We lost to the final. We became second.
By the way,
great Fnatic.
This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Hajou, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Oaks, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Pacey, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.